36X with Commander Q.
36X with Commander Q.
36X with Commander Q.
3. Spirit Long Radio. Long Radio. Broadcast.
36X with Commander Q.
Long Radio.com.
Thank you.
Royce Journal, Volume 18, September 9th, 1999, 4:34 p.m. Traveling east on I-80. Sign up ahead will give some sense of location. Right. 8 miles. Looks like 8 miles from Ogallala, Nebraska. 59 from North Platte, Nebraska. Approximately. Continuing reading Robert Heinlein, Time Enough for Love. Section entitled Di Capo. Part 7. I will enjoy being a grandmother, Maureen said. I'm certain you will, dear. I think you have a great capacity for enjoying life. As I do, Mama, and now I feel sure I got it from both you and Pop. I do theater, she smiled, even when frustrated. Very. Me too, very. But we were talking about how old you look. 18, that is. Pooh, you notice how broken down and baby-chewed my breasts are. I notice nothing of the sort. And you have no sense of touch, sir, for you handled them quite thoroughly. Excellent sense of touch. Lovely breasts. Theater, I tried to take care of them, but they've been filled with milk much of the past 18 years. That one, he nodded toward the pony ring, I didn't have enough milk for, and had to put him on Eagle brand, and he resented it. When I had Richard 2 years later, Woodrow tried to crowd out the new baby and take my freshened breasts. I had to be firm, and what I wanted was to have one at each breast. But one must be fair to children and not spoil one at the expense of another. She smiled indulgently. I have no sense about Woodrow, so I must follow my rules to the letter. Come back in a year, Theodore, and they won't seem so broken down. They swell out and make me look like a cow. Will you make it worth my while? By a walnut tree? Probably no chance, dear one. I'm afraid my scamp killed our one chance. Oh, it wouldn't take that much to make it worthwhile. I was thinking of a taste, direct from producer to consumer. Mama Maureen, as Galahad says, and I've never argued, I'm the most tit-happy man in the galaxy, and I'm staring at the spot where I acquired the habit. I wish I could tell you so, darling. She looked startled, snorted, and looked delighted. That might be almost as hard to arrange as a walnut tree, but yes, it can be done without shocking my children. You are a scamp too, just like Woodrow. I know I would enjoy it, because this is secret, dear. Brian has tasted each new freshening, claims solemnly that he's checking quality and butterfat content. Pop, you're a man of good taste. Does he ever find that one has a taste different from the other? She chuckled happily. Dear one, you have so many playful quirks, just like my husband, that you make me feel bigamous. He claims so, but it's just more of his joking. I can't tell any difference, and I've tasted. Madam, I look forward to giving you an expert's opinion. I think our cowboy has worn out his pony. What next? Want to try the Ben-Hur racer? She shook her head. I enjoy roller coasters, but won't go on one now. I've never miscarried, Theodore, and never will, if being careful will keep me from it. Take Woodrow, if you like. No, you would have to wait, and these woods are filled with wolves and khaki, anxious to pick up 18-year-old grandmothers. The funhouse? All right. Then her mouth twitched. No, I forgot something. Those blasts of air up from the floor intended to make girls squeal and clutch their skirts. Which I don't mind, but no bloomers, dear. Unless you want everyone to see whether or not I'm truly a redhead. Are you? She smiled unoffended. Tease, don't you know? It was very dark near that walnut tree. Redhead at both ends, Theodore, as I would happily show you if it were not for the frustrating circumstances. Brian asked me that while we were courting. Teasing, he didn't need to ask. I was covered with freckles then, just like Marie. I let him find out for himself on the grassy spot by the Marais de Sang River, while a gentle old mare named Daisy cropped grass and paid no attention to my happy squeals. I suppose the automobile is here to stay, but the horse and buggy had many advantages. Didn't you find it so, when you started stepping out with young ladies? Lazarus agreed with a straight face, unable to admit that his memories did not include 1899 or whatever year she was thinking of. Maureen went on, I used to fix a picnic lunch and take a blanket to eat on. That was one way a girl of courting age could be unchaperoned as long as I was home before dark. A horse can take a buggy into spots even more private than our walnut tree. Truthfully, despite this modern talk about wild women and morals breaking down, I had more freedom as a girl than my daughters do, although I try not to make my chaperonage oppressive. They don't seem oppressed. I'm sure they're happy. Theodore, I would much rather have my children be happy than what our pastor says is moral. I simply want to be sure that they aren't hurt. I am not moral by the accepted rules, as you know quite well, though not as well as I had hoped you would know it, and I'm taking out my frustration in talking about it. Perhaps you would rather I did not? Maureen, since we can't do it, the next best thing is talking about it. Me too, Theodore. I wish I were covered with chigger bites and my soul filled with the peace I know you could give me. Since I can't give myself to you the way I'd hoped, I want you to know me as deeply as words can bring us together, as deeply as I wish you were in my body this instant. Does my frankness shock you? No, but it might get you raped right on this bench. Please, not so much enthusiasm, dear one. People can see us. We're talking about the weather. Tell me, is your thing hard? Does it show? No, but if it is, think about blizzards and icebergs. Brian says that helps, because our pony rider needs to be lifted down. They played both games for prizes. Then Mrs. Smith decided that she could risk the funhouse if she clutched her skirts as if crossing a muddy stream. Woody enjoyed it, especially the Hall of Mirrors and the Crystal Maze. Maureen avoided blasts of air by watching girls ahead of them, then either walking on one side or holding her skirts firmly. Woody tired himself out, so Lazarus picked him up, and he seemed to fall asleep as his head touched Lazarus' shoulder. They started to leave, which took them over the farewell air blast. Mrs. Smith was ahead, and Lazarus assumed she had spotted it from the way she swerved. Then she turned as if to speak to him and stood over it. Her skirts went flying high. She did not squeal. She simply put them down a split second too late. Once they were outside, she said, "Well, sir?" "Same color, but curly, I think." "Quite, as curly as my other hair is straight, as you already knew." "And you did it on purpose?" "Certainly. Woodrow is asleep, and you had his head turned away. Perhaps some stranger got an eyeful, but I think not. If someone did, what can he do? Write a letter to my husband?" "Who?" "There was no one in there who knows us. I kept my eyes open and grabbed the chance." "Maureen, you continue to amaze and delight me." "Thank you, sir." "And you have beautiful limbs." "Legs, Theodore." "Brian says so, too, but I'm no expert on women's legs. When he tells me so, he always says legs. Limbs is for public speech, so he says. The more I know about the captain, the more I like him. You have gorgeous legs and green garters." "Of course they're green. When I was a little girl, I wore green hair ribbons. I'm too old for hair ribbons, but if there is the teensiest possibility that my curls will be seen, I wear green garters. I have many pairs. Brian gives them to me, some with naughty mottos on them." "Are there mottos on these?" "Little pitchers. Theater. Little pictures.
Little pictures have big ears."
Oh, okay. Gotcha. "Theater, let's get Woodrow settled down in the back seat." It seemed to Lazarus that little pictures could not be listening. The child was as limp as a rag doll, nor did he wake when he was bedded down. He curled into fetal position, and his mother put the robe over him. Lazarus handed her into the car, cranked it, and joined her. "Straight home?" She said thoughtfully, "There is plenty of gasoline. Brian Jr. filled the tank this afternoon. I don't think Woodrow will wake." "I know there's enough gasoline. I checked when I went out to meet Mr. Johnson's captain. Shall I find that walnut tree?" "Oh, dear, please don't tempt me. Woodrow might wake up and could climb over the back and get out as easily as he climbed in and hid. He's not old enough to understand what we would be doing. Nevertheless, I think his misunderstanding of it could upset him just as much." "No, Theodore. What I meant is this, it's not too late, it's just too late for a little boy. While he sleeps, we can ride around and talk for, an hour, if you wish." "We'll do that." He got rolling and added, "Maureen, although I want to take you back to that walnut tree, I think it's best that we don't. Best for you, I mean." "But darling, why? Don't you think I want you?" "I do think you want me, and God knows I want you, but despite your brave talk, I don't think you've ever done that. You would want to confess to your husband, and if you did, it would make you both unhappy. And I don't want to make Captain Smith unhappy either. He's a good sort. Or maybe you could keep it to yourself, but it would prey on your mind. Because while you love me a little, you love him a great deal more, and I'm sure of that. So it's best, isn't that so? Mrs. Smith was silent for a long time. Then she said, Theodore, take me straight to that walnut tree. No. Why not, dear? I must show you that I do love you and that I am not afraid to let you have me. Maureen, you would do it. You have the courage to do anything. But you would be tense and worried, afraid that Woody would wake up. And you do love Brian. All the sweetly intimate things you've told me kept saying that. But don't you think my heart is big enough for both of you? I'm certain it is. You love ten people that I know of. I'm sure you could squeeze in one more. But I love you, and do not want you to do anything that would make a wall between you and your husband, or hurt you both through your trying to tear down that wall by confessing. Beloved, I want your love even more than I want your dear sweet body. Again she was silent before speaking. Theodore, I must tell you things about my husband and me, private things. You shouldn't. I should, and I must, and I shall. But please, will you touch me while I talk? Don't say anything. Just touch me closely and intimately and nakedly while I strip myself naked with words, please. Lazarus put his free hand on her thigh. She pulled up her skirts, opened her thighs, pushed his hand more firmly to her. Then she covered his hand with her skirt and spoke in an even steady voice. Theodore, beloved, I love Brian, and Brian loves me, and he knows exactly what I am. I could keep a secret forever to keep from hurting him, and he would do the same for me. I must tell you what he said to me before he went away to Plattsburgh, and I must use bedroom words, Theodore. Polite words don't have the force it must have. That night before he left, we were in bed and had just had each other, me still wrapped around him like a curling iron, and him still deep inside me. Swivel hips, he said, a pet name he calls me in bed. I didn't sell the Rio to tie you down. If you want to drive, buy a Ford. It's easier to learn on. I told him I didn't want to drive. I would wait until he came home. He answered, all right, Hot Bottom. And that's a pet name, too. And Brian needs it most lovingly. All right, Hot Bottom, but buy one if you wish. You may need a car while I'm gone. But a car is a minor matter, I said. Your father will be here, and that's good, but don't let him boss you. I'm sorry, he said, and she said. He'll try. He can't help it. It's his nature. But you're as strong-willed as he is. Stand up to him. He'll respect you for it. Now to more important matters, pretty tits. And I like that name too, Theodore, even though they're not, and don't stop me to say there are. They are. Pretty tits, he said, I may not have gotten you pregnant. You usually don't catch up this again this soon. If not, once I'm back from Plattsburgh, we'll keep on trying. And we did, Theodore, and I caught, as I told you. Brian went on. We both know we're going to get into this war, or I wouldn't be going to Plattsburgh. It may last a long time. That million men springing to arms overnight is hogwash. When we do, I'll be gone again, and you'll be lonely, and we both know what a firecracker you are. I'm not telling you to jump the fence again. I said again, Theodore. But if you do, I expect you to do it on purpose, eyes open, and not to regret it afterwards. I have enormous respect for your taste and judgment. I know you won't cause a scandal or upset the children. She paused, then went on. Brian knows me, Theodore. I really am a firecracker, and I've never understood why some women don't like it. My own mother, 9 children, and she told me on my wedding day that it was something women had to put up with for the privilege of having babies. Mrs. Smith snorted. Put up with? Theodore, I was not a virgin when Brian first had me, nor had I let him think so. I told him the truth the day I met him, and 2 minutes after he took off my bloomers, he knew it through having me. Theodore, I broke my maidenhead 3 years before I met Brian, on purpose. I've never been a flirt, and told not my mother, but my father, because I trusted him. We've always been close. Father didn't scold me, didn't even tell me not to do it again. He said he knew that I would do it again, but hoped that I would take his advice and let him keep me out of trouble, and I have, and it did. But that first time when I came to him, scared and ready to cry, it had hurt Theodore and wasn't the thrill I had expected. That time, Father just sighed and locked the door and had me get on his surgery table and examine me and assured me that I hadn't been damaged and I felt much better, and told me I was as healthy a woman as he had ever examined and would have babies with no trouble, and that made me feel smug, and Father was right. I have babies easily and don't yell, or not much, not the way Mother used to. After that, Father examined me from time to time. Doctors don't ordinarily treat their female relatives, not for female things, but Father was the only doctor I dared tell. So Father helped me with my problems and got me all over any shyness about being looked at there or anywhere. Not that I was ever too shy. He told me that sort of modesty was dead-ratted nonsense, but Mother was telling me the exact opposite. I believed him, didn't believe her. But I was telling you what Brian said to me in bed that night. Brian added, I want you to promise one thing, pussycat. If you find that you haven't kept your legs crossed, will you keep it to yourself until this war is over? I will do the same if I have something to confess, and I might. Let's not worry each other more than we have to until the Kaiser is taken care of. Then when I come home, I'll take you to the Ozarks, leave the children home with someone, just us two, and you won't see anything but the ceiling while we get caught up, and also catch up on anything we need to talk about. Is it a bargain, darling? I promised, Theodore. I didn't promise not to jump the fence. He wouldn't let me promise that. I promised to be careful and to save any confessing until the war was won. I wanted to promise that much because he might not come back. Her voice had been steady up to the last. Then it broke, and he realized that she was crying. He started to remove his hand and pull over to the side. Mrs. Smith grabbed his hand, pushed it more firmly back between her thighs, and said, No, no, do touch me and don't stop the car, or I might rape you. I don't know why it makes me so passionate when I let myself remember that Brian might not come back from the war, but it does. I've been that way ever since the day we declared war, and always have to look serene and calm and unworried, for the children, for Brian. I haven't let Brian see me cry, Theodore. You have just now. I suddenly couldn't help it, but I would rather you told Brian that I tried to seduce you than have you tell him that I cried through fear that he might not come back. And now I'll stop it. Mrs. Smith took a kerchief from her purse, wiped her eyes, blew her nose. Don't take me home yet. The children must not see me with my eyes red. Lazarus decided to break cover. I love you, Maureen. I love you, Theodore. In spite of my tears, you have made me happy by letting me unburden myself, and I should not have. You are going to war, too. I feel almost married to you now by telling you things I haven't been able to talk about with anyone else. If you had put me on the grass and had me, it would have been sweet and just what I planned. But this is even closer and sweeter. A woman can open her body to a man before opening her mind. I have two babies by Brian before I learn to open my mind to him the way I have to you tonight. Perhaps our minds are much alike, Maureen. Your father thinks we're cousins. No, he doesn't, darling. He thinks you're my half-brother. Did he say that? And I think so, too. I think Father did not say, dear Theodore, by how broken up he was when he misunderstood you about your intention to enlist. By the way, he insisted that we must claim a service star for you. I feel sure he is right, and I want to believe it. Yes, that makes what I tried to do to you dreadfully sinful in some people's eyes. Incest. I did not care a whit. Since I'm pregnant, it could not possibly cause harm to a baby, and that's the only thing that could make incest wrong. How to tell her? How much to tell her? But I must make her believe me. Your church would call it sinful, Maureen. I don't give a fig for the church. Theodore, I'm not devout. I'm a free thinker like Father. Church is a good atmosphere for children and gives me a proper appearance as a respectable wife and mother. That's all. Sin would not stop me. I don't believe in sin the way the church means it. Sex isn't sin. Sex is never sin. What would stop me would be a chance of getting pregnant by someone other than Brian. But I am pregnant. That you are my half-brother didn't cause me a moment's fret. It just made me more anxious to tell you a warrior's goodbye. Maureen, I'm not your half-brother. Are you sure? Even if you're not, you are still my warrior. I was as proud as Father when you volunteered. I'm your warrior, be sure of that. But I need to know something. This man Nancy may marry, is he a Howard? What did you say? Is he on the approved list of the Ira Howard Foundation? He heard her catch her breath. Where did you hear the foundation? Life is long. Life is short, but the years are long, she answered. Not while the evil days come not. Goodness, I think I'm going to cry again. Stop it. What is the young man's name? Jonathan Weatherall. Of the Weatherall Sperling line. Yes, I remember. Maureen, I am not Ted Ronson. I am Lazarus Long of the Johnson family. Your family. I am descended from you. For several moments, she seemed not to breathe. Then she said softly, I think I am losing my mind. No, my gallant love, you have as strong and sane a mind as I have ever met. Let me explain, because I must tell you something, and you must believe me. Have you ever read a novel by Mr. Herbert George Wells called The Time Machine? Why, yes, Father has a copy. That's me, Maureen, Captain Lazarus Long, time traveler. But that book, I thought it was just a story, but it won't stay that way. Oh, not quite the way Mr. Wells visualized it, but that's what I am, a visitor from a future time. I didn't intend to let anyone suspect this. That's why I claim to be a foundling. Not only is it hard to prove, but any attempt would interfere with my purpose, which is simply to visit this time and observe it. Might even get me locked up as crazy. So I've been careful to keep my mask on, as careful as you are, in talking to those Simpsons, and not letting your children see you cry. You and I do it the same way. Audacity, plus never telling lies we can get caught in. Theodore, I think you believe this. Meaning that I sound sincere but must be crazy. No, dear, yes, that's what I meant, I'm sorry. No reason to be sorry, it does sound crazy. But I'm not afraid that you will have me sent to St. Joe. I'm as safe with you as you are with me. But I must find some way to convince you that I am telling the truth. Because I am about to tell you something you must believe. Or I have dropped my mask to no point. Stop to think. How to prove it? Some prediction? It would have to be very short range to serve the only purpose he had in breaking cover. But he hadn't briefed himself on this year. He hadn't intended to arrive until 1919 and know so little about the years before 1919 that he had even mixed up the date that the United States got into this war. Lazarus, damn your sloppy ways. The next time you make a time trip, you're going to memorize everything about the era that a thing can give you, and a wide margin on both sides. Woody's memories were no help. Lazarus did not even recall having been taken to Electric Park by a sergeant in uniform. Self-centered brat. Electric Park, he remembered. Woody Smith had gone there many times, but no visit stood out in his mind. Maureen, maybe you can think of some way I can prove to you that I'm from the future. Something that will convince you. But this is why I had to tell you. Brian, your husband, my ancestor, will come back unharmed. He's going to go through battle. Shells will fall around him. Shots will whistle past his ears. But no one will touch him. None will touch him. Mrs. Smith gasped. Then she said slowly, Theodore, how do you know? Because you two are my ancestors. I couldn't memorize the Foundation's records on all the Howards of today, but I did study the file of my own, on my own ancestors, ones I might have a chance to meet. You, Brian, Brian's parents in Cincinnati, and I figured out that Brian must have met you because he had attended Rolla, then found you on a Missouri list of eligibles, not the Ohio list that the Foundation gave him. That's certainly something I didn't learn from you or Brian or Ira, and your children probably don't know it. Well, perhaps Nancy does. She's filled out her own questionnaire, hasn't she? Why, yes, months ago. Then it is true, Theodore, or should I call you Lazarus? Call me anything you like, darling. But I still haven't proven anything. Just that I have access to the Foundation's files, which might have been last year, not in the future. We're still looking for proof. I know a proof for a few months from now, but I must make you believe me tonight, so you will have no more tears on your pillow. I don't know how. He caressed her thighs, touched her curls. Here inside you is proof that won't show up in time. This last baby Brian put into your sweet belly. He's a boy, dear ancestress, and you and Brian will name him Theodore Ira, which flatters me enormously. When I read his name in the records. I didn't. Know that he was my namesake, as I hadn't picked my assumed name then. She squeezed his hand with her thighs and sighed. I want to believe you, but suppose Brian wants to name him Joseph or Josephine. Josephine is not a name for a boy. Darling, Brian will name his war baby for the other two stars on your service flag. This war means a lot to him. He'll probably suggest it himself, I don't know. I just know that Theodore Ira is the name you'll register with the Foundation. My other ancestors, Adele Johnson, of course, your mother and Ira's wife, lives in St. Louis. Left him around the time you got married, but didn't divorce him, which probably irked him. I don't think Ira is a man to be celibate simply because his wife leaves but won't turn him loose. He's not, dear. I'm certainly father has, a mistress and goes to see her some nights when he's supposed to be at that chess club. And it's not a chess club, it's a pool hall. I go along with the pretense because he calls it that in front of the children. He does play chess there. Father plays a fine game of billiards, too. Go ahead, darling, Lazarus. I'm willing to believe. Maybe we'll find something. Well, I don't think I'll look up your mother. I don't think I would get along with a woman who thinks sex is something to put up with. I got along with Mother only by lying to her. Father reared me far more than she did. I was his favorite. He let it show, which is why I'm careful not to let it show with Woodrow. Go on, Theodore, Lazarus. That's all of my ancestors that you're related to, except one. Our stowaway, Marine. I'm descended from you and Brian through Woody. She gasped. Really? Oh, I hope it's true. True as taxes, beloved. And it may have saved his life. I've never been closer to infanticide than I was when we found him in the back seat. She giggled. Darling, I felt the same way, but I won't let anger show in my voice even when I'm about to switch a child. I hope I didn't show anger, but I felt it. Beloved, I was so hard I ached until we found Woodrow. Honey love, I was raring to go. And I was just as ready. Oh, Theodore, Lazarus, it's so sweet to be open with you. Yes, you're quite hard now. You're quite hard now. Easy there. Don't make me climb the curb. Oh, groovy. Really? You want me to fix this?
Yeah.
Turn this off for a minute. Easy there, don't make me climb the curb. I have been ever since we left the house, except when I forced it down. But the one Woody ruined was bigger and better. Size isn't important, Theodore Lazarus. A woman must fit any size. Father told me that long ago, and taught me exercises for it, and I never told Brian. I let him think that was simply how I am, and accepted his compliments smugly. I still exercise regularly because my birth canal has been stretched again and again and again by baby's skulls, and if I didn't exercise those muscles, I would be, in Father's salty language, loose as a goose. And I do so want to stay desirable for Brian as many years as possible. And to the iceman and the milkman and the postman and the boy who drives the grocery wagon. Tease. I'd like to stay young there till I die. You will, you 18-year-old prospective grandmother. Let's get our minds off sex and back to time travel. I'm still looking for a proof, so that you will know why I'm certain that Brian comes back okay. But to stop your worry, it must be something that happens soon, and certainly before Woody's birthday. Why Woody's birthday? Didn't I get that far? This war ends on Woody's next birthday, the 11th of November. He added, I'm certain of that. It's a key date in history, but I'm racking my brain for some event between now and then, as soon as possible, to stop your worries. But oh shucks, dear, I made a silly mistake. I meant to arrive after this war is over, but I gave my computer one critical figure with an error in it, just a little one, but it made me arrive 3 years too soon. Not her fault, she accepts any data I give her, and she's as accurate a computer as ever conned a ship. Not a fatal error either. I'm not lost in time. My ship will pick me up in 1926, exactly 10 Earth years, after she dropped me. But that's why I didn't study the history of the next few months. I expected to skip this war. I'm not studying wars. History's full of wars. I'm studying how people live. Theodore, I'm confused. I'm sorry, darling. Time travel is confusing. You speak of a computer, and I'm not sure what you mean. And you said Shikans, whatever that means, a ship that will pick you up in 1926, and I don't understand any of it. As an aside, that's why I never intended to tell anybody, but I had to tell you so that you could stop worrying. My ship is a spaceship, like Jules Verne, only more so. A starship. I live on a planet a long way off, but it is a time ship, too. She travels in both space and time, and it's too complicated to explain. The computer is the ship's brain, a machine, a very complex machine. My ship is named Dora, and the machine, the computer that cons it, or runs it, steers it, is called Dora 2. That's the name she answers to when I speak to her. She's a very intelligent machine and can talk. Oh, there's a crew, two of my sisters, so of course they are descended from you too, and they look like you. A crew is necessary. Can't let a ship go running around by itself, except automatic freighters on pre-calculated runs. But Dora does the hard freighters... But Dora does the hard work, and Laz and Laura, Lapis Lazuli Long and Laura Lee Long, tell Dora what to do and let her do it. He squeezed Mrs. Smith's thigh and grinned. If that air blast had kept your skirts up 2 seconds longer, I would know more about how closely they resemble you, as they usually run around naked. They look like you in the face. Bodies, too, from that too short glimpse of your lovely legs, except that Laz and Laura are freckled all over as solidly as Marie is on her face. I'd be freckled if I didn't stay out of the sun. When I was Marie's age, Father called me Turkey Egg. But all over? They don't wear any clothes? Oh, they enjoy fancy dress for parties, where the weather might be cold, but it rarely is. We live in a climate like southern Italy. We don't wear anything very often. Lazarus smiled and caressed her thigh. They don't need to leave their bloomers home to be ready for lovemaking. They don't own any bloomers. They aren't a bit shy. They'll be delighted to trip your father. They like older men. They're much younger than I am. Lazarus, how old are you? Lazarus hesitated. Maureen, I don't want to answer that. I'm older than I look. Ira Howard's experiment was successful. Sid, let me tell you about my family, your family, too. We all are descended from you by one line or another. Two of my wives and one of my co-husbands are descended both from Nancy and from Woody. Wives? Co-husband? Sweetheart, marriage takes many forms. Where I live, you don't need a divorce or death to gather in someone you love. I have four wives and three co-husbands, and my sisters, Laz and Laura, and they may marry out of the family or they may stay. And don't look startled. You said you didn't fret when you thought I was your half-brother. And don't worry about harm to babies. They know far more about such things at that when and where than they do in the here and now. We don't risk harm to babies, of which we have plenty, and cats and dogs and anything a child can pet and take care of. It's a real family and a house to fit a big family. I can't tell you about each one. We've got to get our stowaway home. But I want to tell you about one, because you've been insisting that you don't look 18 merely because you've been using your breasts to feed babies. Tomorrow, descended from you through Nancy and her Jonathan. Want to hear about Nancy's umpty-ump granddaughter? Tomorrow is about 250 years old, I think. 250? Yes, one of my co-husbands, Ira Weatherall, also from Nancy and Jonathan, but from Woody, too, and named for your father, not for Ira Howard, is over 400 years old. Marie and Ira Howard's experiment worked. We have longer lifespans inherited from you and all our Howard ancestors. But also... but also in that when and where, they know how to rejuvenate a person. Tamara has had two rejuvenations. One recently and looks as young as you do. Real rejuvenation. Tamara was pregnant when I left. But how she looks is not important. Tamara is a healer, and I suspect she gets it from you. Theodore Lazarus, again, I don't understand. A healer? Like a faith healer? No, if Tamara has a religious faith, she has never mentioned it. Tamara is calm and happy and serene, and anyone around her feels it strongly, just as with you, darling, that he or she is happy too. If people are ill, they get well faster if Tamara touches them or talks to them or sleeps with them. But Tamara was not young when I met her. She was quite old and thinking about letting it go at that, dying of old age. But I was ill, very ill, sick in my soul, and Ishtar, later my wife, and the top-notch rejuvenator in all the Milky Way, went out and fetched Tamara. Tamara, little round pot belly, breasts that were really baggy, sags under her eyes and her chin, all the old age things. Tamara healed the sickness in my soul just by being with me, and somehow this renewed her own interest in life, and she took another rejuvenation, and is young again, and has already added another baby to the Marine Nancy line, and is pregnant still again. You and Tamara are so much alike, Marine. She's just love with some skin around it, and so are you. But Lazarus paused and frowned. Marine, I don't know how to convince you that I'm telling you the truth. You'll know it when Woody's sixth birthday comes around, and they blow every whistle and ring every bell, and the newsboys shout, "Extra, extra, Germany surrenders."
Rest you.
But that'll be too late to help you. I want to stop your worries now. You need to rest? I can drive for a while before it gets too dark. But we haven't finished this chapter. Is that upsetting?
How much do you have left?
18 pages.
Okay.
Sanyo X with Commander Pew.
36 Jesuí e Commander Q.
36 X with Commander Pew. Train.
And spirit and all right,
Cindy.
Six 25 p.m. Stopped at a rest stop. I'm going to say in a minute where. nice trucks go by. Mio is stretched out on the grass, dozing. Really deserved doze. Didn't sleep too well in the freezing cold last night in Laramie. This is the Sutherland eastbound rest area, milepost 159 and 160, Nebraska. We've made it, I'd say, past, I don't know, maybe nearing halfway across the state, but not there yet. A lot more driving to do. And I want to record the crickets of Nebraska. Try and get off of home, which I haven't managed to do. I can see Mio in the distance. She's just splayed. It's wonderful. She needs it. Hardcore driving. Hardcore driving. It's frustrating, too. We've been in the car for like 5 hours straight with not much by way of stops, and yet we've only covered about 250 miles today. So I'm going to campaign to drive more than my usual 50 miles. That's all for now. Save some tape for later.
36 X-Wing Commander Q.
36 X-Wing Commander Q.
36 X-Wing Commander Q. Train.
And spirit and all right,
Gawkers.
Yes, what is this? Like?
There has to be like a department or a secretary of gawkiness.
So there's this, they built this off of the road where it's completely distracting and then they have to put a sign to tell you not to look at it.
Oh, that's delightful. Volume 19, Voice Journal, September 9th, 1999, 9:26 p.m. I-80, traveling along I-80 East, mile stop, it's 250 something. It all looks the same anyway, especially at night.
Somewhere in Nebraska. Well, I'm stuck in Nebraska!
Stuck in Nebraska, but speeding along, speeding east. Wait for a blue sign.
Yes.
Certainly don't wait for an exit sign. Here I go. Mile marker 276 just went by. Okay. Continuing with Robert Heinlein, Time Enough for Love. Okay, so, so Marine and Lazarus want to look at each other, but they can't use electric lights, so they're going to get a candle. Yes, darling, matches where? Let me go and I'll get up and light it. I can find both in the dark. Will I be allowed to look at you too? Sure, for contrast, Beauty and the Beast. She giggled and kissed his ear. Goat, maybe, or a stallion. Theater, I needed to be baby stretched to accept. I needed to be baby stretched to accept you. I needed to be baby stretched to accept you. I thought you said I felt like Brian. But he is a stallion too. Let me go. Pay toll. Oh, goodness, darling, don't do that now, or I'll be so shaky I won't be able to strike a match. Standing, and by the light on one candle, they studied each other. Lazarus felt his breath grow short at the dazzling glory of her. For most of 2 years, he had been deprived of the sweet joy of seeing a woman, and had not realized how starved he had been for that great privilege. Darling, can you guess how much this means to me? Mama Marine, has no one ever told you how much more sweetly beautiful a full-blown woman is than a maiden? Ah, that would be the Chuck attitude. Is Marine a goddess?
But of course.
But of course. Certainly your lovely breasts have held milk. That's what they're for. Why would I want them to look like marble? I don't. She studied him just as closely, her face solemn, her nipples crinkled tightly. Theodore Lazarus, my strange love, will you guess that I suggested candlelight so that I could see you? A woman is not supposed to get hungry for such things, but I miss the sight, the naked sight of my husband. And how, in the name of Satan and all his fallen thrones, I can last even till November without even seeing a man I do not know. Alma Bixby told me she had never seen her husband without clothes. How can a woman live like that? I have children by a man she's never seen all over? Shocked her when I said that of course I had seen my husband naked. Theodore Lazarus, you don't look like my briny boy. Your coloration is more like mine. But oh, how you feel like him, smell like him, talk like him, love like him. Your pretty thing is coming up high again, briny beloved, I'm going to have him once more as hard as possible. And I'll tell you about it tomorrow night if you'll just ask me for a new bedtime story. Or if I must, I'll save it for you till you get back. You're as strange a man as he is, and just the wise and tolerant husband your body wife needs. Then, cross my heart, dearest, I'll try my best. Wait a minute. Body Marine's husband's name is Brian?
Brian.
Oh, okay. I'm starting to get weird.
Brian Smith.
Yeah.
The oldest boy is Brian
Jr. Right. Anyway. Then cross my heart, dearest. I'll try my best to keep from it until you come back from over there. But if I can't, even with father and 8 children to guard me, I promise you solemnly I will never bed with anyone but a warrior, a man to be proud of in every way, such as this strange man. Lazarus, my love, are you really my descendant? I do believe that you know when the war will be over and that my Briny will come back safely to me. Why, I am not sure, but since you told me, I have been free from worry for the first time in many a lonely moon. I hope the rest is true, too. I want to believe in Tamara and that she is descended from me, but I don't want you to go away in only 8 years. That innocent little picture. If I had not feared shocking you, I would have given you some real French postcards Briny has taken of me. Will you be upset if I take a closer look? I'll chance it. Mrs. Smith suddenly dropped to one knee, looked closely, then touched him. She looked up. Now? Yes, he picked her up, placed her on the bed. Almost solemnly, she helped him, then caught her breath as they joined. Heart, Theodore, this time don't be gentle. Yes, my beautiful one. When their happy violence was over, she lay quiet in his arms, not talking, communing through touch and the light of one candle. At last she said, I must go, Theodore. No, don't get up. Just let me slide out. She got up, picked up her wrap, blew out the candle, came back, leaned down, and kissed him. Thank you, Theodore, for everything. But come back to me. Come back to me. I will. I will. Quickly and silently, she was gone. All right. Coda 1. So somewhere in France. Dear all my family, I am writing this in my pocket diary where it will stay until this war is over. Not that it matters. You'll get it just as soon. But I can't send a sealed letter now, much less one sealed into 5 envelopes. Something called censorship, which means that every letter is opened and reread and anything that might interest the Boche is cut out, such as dates and places and designations of military units and probably what I had for breakfast. Beans and boiled pork and fried potatoes with coffee that would dissolve a spoon. You see, I had this lovely ocean voyage as a guest of Uncle Sam and am now in the land of fine wines and beautiful women. The wine has been von extremely beautiful, von extremely ordinary, and they seem to be hiding the beautiful women. The best looking one I've seen had a slight mustache and very hairy legs, which I could have ignored had I not made the mistake of standing downwind. Darlings, I am not sure the French take baths, at least in wartime, but I'm in no position to criticize. A bath is a luxury. Today, given a choice between a beautiful woman and a hot bath, I'd pick the bath, otherwise she wouldn't touch me. Don't worry that I am now in a war zone. That you've received this is proof that the war is over and I'm okay. But it's easier to write a letter than it is to put trivia into a diary every day. War zone is an exaggeration. This is fixed warfare, meaning both sides are in the same fix, pinned down, and I am too far behind the lines to get hurt. I am in charge of a unit called a squad, eight men, me and 5 other riflemen, plus an automatic rifleman, the rifle, not the man. This war has no robot fighters. And an 8th man who carries ammunition for the automatic rifleman. It's a corporal's job, and that's what I am. The promotion to sergeant I was expecting in my last letter, as dated from the United States, got lost in the shuffle when I was transferred to another outfit. Being a corporal suits me. It is the first time I've had men permanently assigned to me, time enough to get acquainted with each one, learn his strong points and weak ones, and how to handle him. They are a fine bunch of men. Only one is a problem, and it's not his fault. It results from the prejudices of the time. His name is F.X. Dinkowski, and he is simultaneously the only Catholic and the only Jew in my squad. And twins, if you've never heard of either one, and twins, if you've never heard of either one, ask Athene. He's Catholic and Jewish. Yeah, me too. I mean, my parents are that.
Right.
By ancestry, he comes from one religion, then he was brought up in another, and he has had the tough luck to be placed with country boys who have still a third religion and are not very tolerant. Plus the additional misfortunes of being a city boy and having a voice that grates even on me and is clumsy, and when they pick on him, they do if I'm not right there, it makes him more clumsy. Truthfully, he's not soldier material, but I wasn't asked. So he's the ammunition carrier, the best I could do to balance my squad. They call him Dinky, which is only mildly disparaging, but he hates it. I use his full last name, I do with all of them, for ritualistic reasons having to do with the mystique of military organizations at the here and now, it is best to call a man by his family name. But let's leave the finest squad in the AEF and bring you up to date on my first family and your ancestors. Just before Uncle Sam sent me on that pleasant cruise, I was given a vacation. I spent it with the Brian Smith family and lived in their house as they have adopted me for the rest of this war, me being an orphan. That leave was the happiest time I've had since I was dropped from the Dora. I took Woody to an amusement park, primitive but more fun than some sophisticated pleasures of Secundus. I took him on rides and treated him to games and things that were fun for him, and fun for me because he enjoyed them so. Wore himself out and he slept all the way home. He behaved himself and now we are chums. I've decided to let him grow up. There may be hope for him yet. I had long talks with Gramp, got better acquainted with all of the others, especially Mama and Pop. The latter was unexpected. I had met Pop for a few minutes at Camp Funston, then he came home on leave the day I had to go back, and I didn't expect to see him. But he got away a few hours early, a bonus an officer can sometimes manage, and we overlapped, and he telephoned to the camp and got me a 2-day extension. Why? Tamara and Ira listened very carefully. To attend the wedding of Miss Nancy Irene Smith and Mr. Jonathan Sperling Wetherall. Athene explained to the twins the historic significance of this union. List the famous and important people in that line, dear, not the total genealogies. And Ira and Tamara, in our own little family, of course, and Ishtar, and at least 5 of our children, and I may have missed someone, not having all the genealogical lines in my head. I was best man to Jonathan, and Pop gave the bride away, and Brian was an usher, and Marie was ring bearer, and Kara was maid of honor, and George was charged with keeping Woody from setting fire to the church while Mama took care of Dickie and Ethel. Athene can explain terms and ritual. I shan't try. But it not only gave me 2 more days of leave, much of which I spent running errands for Mama. These medieval weddings are complex operations. But it also gave me time with Pop, and now I know him better than I ever did as a son under his roof, and like him much and heartily approve of him. Ira, he reminds me of you. Brainy, no nonsense, relaxed, tolerant, and warmly friendly. Bullen, the bride was pregnant, a proper Howard wedding, at a time when all brides are assumed to be virgins. Pregnant with, if memory serves, Jonathan Brian Weatherall. Is that right, Justin, and who is descended from him? Remind me, Athene. I've met a lot of people over the centuries. I may have even married some descendant of Jonathan Brian at some time. I rather hope so. Nancy and Jonathan are a fine young couple. I turned my Lodulette over to them for a 6-day honeymoon. Then Jonathan did join the army, but too late to get into combat. Nancy's warrior hero just the same. He tried. Some fiddling sergeant who couldn't find his arse with both hands wants me to round up my squad and do something about a dugout that someone was careless with. So, all my love from Corporal Buddy Boy. Somewhere in France, dear Mr. Johnson. Please give this a second censoring. Some of it will have to be explained to the rest of my adopted family. I hope that Mrs. Smith received the thank you note I mailed from Hoboken and could read it, writing on my knee while bouncing on the CNA Railroad does not improve my handwriting. In any case, I thank her again for the happiest holiday of my life, and thanks to all of you. Please tell Woody that I will no longer spot him a horse. From here on, we play even, or he can find another sucker. 4 out of 5 is too many. Now for the rest. Note signature and address. My rocker did not last to France, then 3 chevrons dwindled to 2. Can you explain to Mrs. Smith and to Carol, those two in particular, that being busted does not disgrace a man forever, and that I am still Carol's own special soldier if she will let me be, and in fact, I am far more of a real soldier. I am at last free of being tagged as instructor, and am now leading a squad in a combat outfit. I wish I could tell her where, but if I stuck my head up over the parapet, I might see some pineys if one of them didn't see me first. I'm not gold bricking 100 miles back. I hope you aren't ashamed of me. No, I'm sure you're not. You are too old a soldier to care about rank. I'm in it, and that's what counts with you, I know. May I say, sir, you are and have always been, as long as I've known you, an inspiration to me. I won't detail the 2 negative promotions. In the Army, excuses don't count, but I want you to know that neither resulted from anything dishonorable. The first was in the transport and involved a duty-struck master-at-arms and a poker game in an area for which I was responsible. The second came while I was instructing, dummy trenches, dummy no man's land, and a captain told me to dress up that skirmish line, and I said, "Hell, Captain, are you trying to save bullets for the Kaiser, or haven't you heard of machine guns?" I suppose I shouldn't have said hell. In fact, I used another expression far more common among soldiers. So later that day, I was a corporal, and my transfer took place when I requested it again the same day. So here I am and feeling fine. It is indeed a fact that the closer a man gets to the front, the better his morale is. I've become chummy with cooties, and the mud in France is deeper and stickier than in southern Missouri. And I dream about hot baths in Mrs. Smith's wonderful guest room for soldiers. Nice. But I'm in good health and good spirits, and I send my love to all of you. Respectfully yours, Corporal Ted Bronson. Hey down in there, Corporal Bronson, send him out. Lazarus climbed slowly out of the dugout, letting his eyes adjust to darkness. Yes, Lieutenant? Wire-cutting job. I want you to volunteer. Lazarus said nothing. Didn't you hear me? I heard you, sir. Well? You asked me for a volunteer, sir. No, I said I wanted you to volunteer. Lieutenant, I volunteered on April 6th last year. That you set my quota for the duration. A latrine liar, huh? Lazarus again said nothing. Sometimes I think you want to live forever. Lazarus still said nothing. You are so right, you 7-pound biffy. And so do you. You haven't been over that parapet even once. God help this platoon when you do. He thought. Very well. Since you want it the hard way, I order you to lead this party. Find 3 more volunteers from your squad. If they don't volunteer, you know what to do. Once you pick them, tell them to get ready. Then you haul ass to CP, and I'll show you the map. Yes, sir. And Bronson, make damn sure you do a good job, because a little bird told me that you're going to lead the way through the holes. Dismissed. Lazarus went unhurriedly back down below. So we're going over the top? Big secret. Nobody knows it but Pershing and about 100,000 Yanks and twice that many Boches and the Imperial High Command. Why do they advertise a surprise attack with 3 days of softening up bombardment that does nothing worth mentioning but tells the Boche where to bring up his reserves and gives him time to position them? Forget it, Lazarus. You're not in charge. Put your mind on picking out 3 who can get out, do it, and come back. Not Russell. You'll need your automatic rifleman before dawn. Wyatt was out last night. Dinkowski might as well have a cowbell around his neck. Fielding is on the sick list, damn it. So it has to be Schultz, Tally, and Cadwallader. 2 of them old unkillables, and Tally the only rebel with too little experience. And a shame Fielding has Le Grip or whatever it is. I need him. All right, Schultz gets Cadwallader. I'll nurse Tally through it. It was a 2-squad dugout. His squad was sacked in on the left. The other squad had a card game going by candlelight on their side. Lazarus called his squad into a huddle, waking Cadwallader and Schultz to do so. Russell and Wyatt stayed in their bunks as the huddle took place against them. The lieutenant wants us to cut wire and told me to ask for 3 volunteers. Schultz nodded at once as Lazarus knew he would. I'll go, he said. In Lazarus' opinion, his assistant squad leader should have a section. Schultz was 40, a married volunteer, and tried hard to offset his name, his trace of German accent, second generation, but doing it steadily, methodically, without flash, no glory hound. Lazarus hoped that not many of the Germans they faced were of Schultz's quality, but he knew they were, especially veterans pulled back from the collapsed Russian front. His only fault in Lazarus's eyes was that he disliked Dinkowski. That's one. Don't speak all at once. What's the matter with them? Cadwallader, hard name to say, said loudly, jerking a thumb at the other squad. Teacher's pets? They haven't done anything for a week. Corporal O'Brien answered for his squad. Tell your troubles to Jesus. The chaplain's gone over the hill. Who's dealing? Who's next? Dinkowski gulped. Take me, Corporal. Telly shrugged. Okay. Damn me, Dinky. Why didn't you wait and simply make it unanimous? And damn that silly second John for ordering me to ask for volunteers. Better tell him. Let's hear some more voices. This isn't the SOS. Lieutenant Birdbrain, you post-nasal drip. Cadwallader is right. It's not our turn. Why didn't you go through the platoon sergeant and section leader? They're fair about handing out dirty details. Russell and Wyatt spoke up together. Lazarus waited, then said, Cadwallader, you're the only holdout. Corporal, you asked for 3 volunteers. How come you want the whole squad? Because I want you, you unappetizing ape. You're the best soldier in the squad. Because I need you. Will you volunteer? I ain't no volunteer, Corporal. I was drafted. Very well. Damn all officers who interfere when they shouldn't. Wyatt, you were out last night. Get back in your bunk. Russell, you get some sleep, too. You may be busy soon. Schultz, I'll take Dinkowski. You take Tally. Black me up first and make it fast. I've got to go see the lieutenant. Get out the cork. Lazarus got through their own wire without much trouble by enlarging breaks German shells had made. He did all the work himself, simply requiring Dinkowski to stay flat and follow him. There was the regular crump of artillery, their own and the German howitzers. Lazarus ignored them, there being nothing better he could do. The chattering cough of machine guns he ignored too, as long as the sound came from far enough along his flanks. Snipers he did not worry about other than to stay low. His prime wariness was directed at German patrols, if any, and at star shells, far too many. The latter were the reason he had Dinkowski stay belly down. He did not trust his assistant to freeze and hold it if caught on his knees when a star shell burst. Oh, those are probably the things that, they're like road flares. They hit and they light up a big section for a long time.
Yeah, I think so.
Expose
from
whatever there.
Description that it's coming.
Yeah. All right. Once past the last of their own entanglements, he led Dinkowski, both belly crawling, into a shell hole, then put his mouth to the private's ear. Stay here till I get back. But Corporal, I don't want to stay behind. Not so loud, you'll wake the baby. Whisper against my ear. If I'm not back in an hour, go back alone. But I can't find my way back. There's the Dipper. There's the Polestar. Go back southwest. If you miss the gaps, you've got wire cutters. Just remember this. When a star shell bursts, freeze. The time to move is just as it goes out while their eyes are still dazzled. And try to be quiet. You remind me of two skeletons on a tin roof. Don't get shot by your own people at the last minute. What's the password? Oh hell, it's Charlie Chaplin. Forget it again and you'll get more than a blighty. Some of our lads are trigger happy. Now repeat back. Corporal, I'm going to cut wire with you. Lazarus sighed inwardly. The clumsy little clown wanted to soldier. If I don't let him tag along, it can kill his spirit. But if I do let him, it might kill both of us. Cadwallader, I admire your good sense and hate your guts, and I wish I had you along. All right, not a word from here on. Pat my foot and point if you have to, and stay that close. Remember what I said about star shells. See any Boche, don't breathe. If they surprise us, surrender at once. Pause for scratch. Surrender? If you want to be a grandfather, you can't kill a German patrol all by your lonesome. Even if you could, it would make so much racket that their machine guns would chop you in two. Stick close and stay down. Lazarus could almost touch the first German wire when a star shell burst and the private panicked, tried for a shell hole they had just come through, and was hit as he fell into it. Lazarus lay still and listened to screams as the dazzling star burst above him. One of our own, he mused. A German shell would burst to backlight the American trenches. If that poor little dope doesn't shut up, the air around here is going to be thick with merry greetings. Can't cut wire with all that advertising. And, oh hell, he's my boy. I've got to take care of him. Probably be a favorite of Dinky to finish him off. But Marine wouldn't like that. Okay, let's get him back, then come back and finish this crummy detail. No sleep tonight, and over the top about 0400. Next time, join the Navy. The flare died out, and Lazarus went up fast and moving as another star shell flared. Machine gun bullets stitched his side and knocked him into the shell hole. One struck a hard implant in the right side of his belly, tumbled, and chewed its way out above his left hip. Others did other damage, nothing too difficult to repair in 4291 AD, but this being the Dark Ages, any one of them was enough. Lazarus felt it only as a mighty blow that knocked him off his feet and into the shell hole. He did not become unconscious at once. He had time to realize that he was mortally wounded. He lay as he had fallen and looked up at his stars, realizing that he had come to his ending place. Every animal finds its ending place. Some find it in a trap, another in a fight it cannot win, some happy few in a quiet place to wait for the end. Whatever it is the ending place, and most of us know when we reach it. This is mine. Did Dinky know? I think so. He stopped screaming. I think he looked for his. Odd that it doesn't hurt. Thanks for making it worthwhile, Marine. Lita, Dorable, Tamara, Minerva, Laz, Laura, Ira, Marine. He heard wild geese honking high overhead, looked up at the stars again as they blacked out. Looked up at his stars again as they blacked out. Coda 2. You still don't understand, the gray voice droned on. There is no time, there is no space. Whatever was, is, and ever shall be. You are you, playing chess with yourself, and again you have checkmated yourself. You are the referee. Morals are your agreement with yourself to abide by your own rules. To thine own self be true, or you spoil the game. Crazy. Then vary the rules and play a different game. You cannot exhaust her infinite variety. If you would just let me look at your face, Lazarus muttered pettishly. Try a mirror. Coda 3. From the Kansas City Post, November 7th, 1918. We report with sorrow, supplementary list of our losses. We report with sorrow those from Kansas and Missouri killed Abel Thomas J. Private Jefferson City, Avery John M. Second Lieutenant Sedalia, Baird George M. PFC Topeka, Badger F. M. Private St. Joseph, Casper Robert S. Sergeant Hatfield R.S. Corporal KCK, Kansas City, Kansas. Kerr Jack M., 1st Lieutenant Joplin. Pfeiffer Hans, PFC Dodge City. Missing in action. Austin George W., Sergeant Hannibal, Missouri. Staff Sergeant Hannibal, Missouri. Bell T.R., Corporal, Wichita, Kansas. Barry L.M., Private, something Missouri. Bronson Theodore, Corporal, Kansas City, Missouri. Casper M.M., First Lieutenant, Lawrence, Kansas. Dillingham O.G., Private Ro. It's hard to read. Dillingham O.G., Private Rolls. Farley F.X., Kansas City, Missouri. Paz William, P.F.C., Springfield. Oliver R.C., P.F.C., St. Louis. Wounded, and then it sort of peters out. Coda 4. Coda 4. Let's go to 3. Ira, Galahad, got him? Yes, hoist us in. Oh, what a mess. Ish, about 2 liters and lots of jelly. Get him inside and let me see him. Lore, you can get us out of here now. Seal up door and bounce it. Sealed and zooming, screens down. What the goddamn hell have they done to boss? I'm trying to find out, Dora. Be ready with the tank. I may freeze him. Ready now, Ish. Laszlo, I told you we should pick him up sooner. I told you. Hype down, Dora. We told him he'd get his ass shot off, but he was having more fun than kittens. And wouldn't have thanked us. And wouldn't have come. You know how stubborn he is. Tomorrow, said Ishtar. Cuddle his head and talk to him. Keep him alive. I don't want to freeze him, if at all, until I've made temporary repairs. Hamadryad clamped there. Galahad, one slug hit the finder. That's how his intestines got so chopped up. Clone trans? Perhaps. That's the way he generates repair and support may be enough. Justin, you were right. The dates in his letters did prove that he didn't last through it. Losing the finder's signal pinpointed when and where. Galahad, are you finding more fragments? I want to close him. Tomorrow, rouse him. Make him talk. I don't want to have to freeze him. The rest of you shut up and get out. Go help maneuver with the children. Glad to, Justin says hoarsely. I'm about to throw up. Marine? Lazarus murmured. I'm here, darling, Tamara answered, cradling his head against her breast. Bad dream. Thought I was dead. Just a dream, beloved. You cannot die. Wow. Well, that's a... gets his birth date wrong, and it gets his death date wrong, unless there's some other indication somewhere else as to when he died.
He doesn't die.
So, where the hell did they get that date?
There should be no date. He's alive. He's
right.
Still always alive.
312. 412.
It's the same kind of idiocy that... I think I told you about when I stopped reading the biography that I was reading of Heinlein.
Yeah.
Because the guy was a world's funniest asshole anyways. But in I Will Fear No Evil, he was making this huge thing about how it was all about racial tension and all this, because the lead character was black, and she wasn't black. And I went back and read it, and every time I've read it since, I've specifically looked to see what the fuck he's talking about. And he's making this huge thing out of something that isn't there at all.
You've just passed mile 400 for the day.
Cool. And we just passed at the same time mile 4600.
Wow.
So did we start at 4200?
We must have. Well, no, we didn't start at 4200 because I'm counting specifically mile markers.
Right,
I'm not counting all the extra stuff.
Right, and we've driven a little bit more often on the highway and whatnot.
But in terms of actual progress, we've just passed 400 miles of actual eastern progression on the highway.
Cool.
So I guess if we counted it the regular way, which we did coming out, we counted the extra stuff, you know, I mean, whoever was counted on the counter, it's more than 400. It's way, it's probably like, it was,
yeah, I'm not exactly sure where it started.
It's probably, you know, like 425 or 430 or something.
Maybe not that much, but something more than 400. I think we were at,
with Commander Q.
36 X with Commander Q.
36 X with Commander Q. Train.
And Spirit and all right.
Once upon a time, birdshit line. 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 Once upon a time, birdshit line.
Once upon a time, birdshit line. Once upon a time, birdshit line.
Once upon a time,
birdshit line.
Once upon a time, birdshit line. I don't know why time, birdshit line. I don't know why time, birdshit line. Once upon a 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 time, birdshit line.
Birdshit line, once upon a time, what's a boy? Birdshit line, once upon a time, what's a boy? Birdshit line, once upon a time, what's a boy?
Once upon a time, birdshit line. Once upon a time, birdshit line.
Oh, big fat hairy liar.
Queen, princess of the
big unicorn hairy liar.
And to my parade,
princess of the big unicorn hairy liar.
And to my
once upon a time, birdshit liar.
Big unicorn hairy liar.
Oh, great big green hairy liar.
Birdshit liar.
Big unicorn hairy liar.
Silvery unicorn, big spaceship
liar.
Silvery unicorn, big spaceship
liar.
Oh, you'd hardly believe the things we've seen. Oh, you'd hardly believe the things we've seen. And so we will have to
for to have the little
we'll be right back. Elemental differences of togetherness, differences of elements, many ways, differences, spell,
servant wizard.
Inspiration. Please hear me now.
I am your faithful servant wizard. Please be kind to my friends.
I am your faithful servant wizard.
Amen. Please be kind to my friends.
I am your faithful servant wizard.
Amen. Please be kind to my friends.
Amen. Faithful.
Dear silvery unicorn of inspiration. Dear silvery unicorn of inspiration. Please moonshine upon my child eye.
Unicorn of inspiration.
Please moonshine upon my child eye. Long have I been faithful to your night
moonshine upon my child eye.
Long have I been faithful to your night moonshine upon my child. I await my reward.
I've been faithful to your night moonshine upon
I await my reward.
I've been faithful.
Please night make it something nice.
I await my reward.
I've been faithful. Please make it something nice.
I await
something I can share with my friends and wife.
Please
make it something nice.
I await
something I can share with my friends and wife.
Please
something happy and waggly and dancy.
Something I can share with my friends and wife.
Please something happy and waggly and dancy.
Something share with
leapy, laughy and prancy.
Happy and waggly and dancy.
Something share with
leapy, laughy and prancy.
Happy and
a four leaf leather
something share with
Guadalupe blade blood
and prancy.
Happy and
a four leaf
leather
something share with
Guadalupe blade blood
blowing
bubbles in the green sun.
Rattlates not joy.
Red Guadalupe blade
blood
blowing bubbles in the green sun.
Rattlates not joy.
Red one,
yours faithfully.
Bubbles in the green sun.
Rattle
silly wizard.
Red one,
yours
faithfully.
Bubbles in the green sun.
Rattle
silly wizard.
Number 3,483,000,000 per second. And third and fourth.
Rattle silly wizard.
Number 3,483,000,000 per second. And third and fourth.
Rattle silly wizard.
Number 3,483,000,000 per second. And third and fourth.
Rattle silly wizard.
Sometimes I'm just a little bit.
Once upon a time,
thanks a lot. Good night.